Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Welcome back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And what can I say? It's been red letter weeks here in Colombia for us. We've going from strength to strength and interviewee to interviewee. And you know what? Pretty happy about all these things. They just keep getting better. It just keeps getting bigger. So yeah, I want to say we've signed up an alliance with a company called Day Tours for You. You can look them up. That's Day Tours for You. It's a four is in the number and U is the letter. DayToursForYou.com, and you know they offer day tours around various parts of South America. We've got in Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Uruguay, various itineraries. And if you're interested in looking them up and you have or you want to use a discount code, you can use Columbia Calling for You, and that gets you a discount code on there. So don't forget Day Tours for You. They enrich travel experiences in South America. In other news, I've decided to launch a campaign on Indiegogo to raise an amount of money to publish the first ever edition of the Columbia Calling magazine. The idea is to have an annual magazine that comes out showcasing the best talent of English writing, journalism, let's say writing, art, photography, and so on and so forth about Columbia. It's about being proactive, getting it out there. Now, I need a lot of money for this, and it's up on Indiegogo. You can just look it up on Columbia Calling. And yes, please back us, or at the very least, spread the word to people who you think might want to help and might be involved or might have some vested interest in Colombia, because it's time to celebrate long-form journalism and, you know, in-depth reporting about Colombia that's not in the mainstream press. I know I harp on about this, week in, week out, but that's what we want to do here. We want to continue improving Colombia's impression, not by being a tourism board publication, but by being an accurate and quality publication. So just look us up on Indiegogo.com, Columbia Calling, and you'll find us there. So that was launched on Saturday evening. We've got a few donations at the moment, but I'm hoping that this picks up now that I'm starting to do some real publicity. And we'll be back after this short break, episode 143, with Jeremy and Nicole of La Mesa Food Tours. So we'll be talking all about food and the options for tours in Bogota and Medellin. So it's a foodie episode this week, and I know you're going to enjoy it. So stay tuned in, keep enjoying Columbia Calling, keep spreading the word, please, because we're going on greater, onto the greater things. And I really want to be here pushing the envelope regarding this podcast and the potential magazine. So, with final note again, remember to look up the website daytoursforyou.com. And if you want to book on one of their tours, put in the code Columbia Calling for You, and there'll be a discount. So, thank you again, and don't go away. We'll be back with Nicole and Jeremy of La Mesa Food Tours. Ah, And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here with our very special guests this week, Nicole and Jeremy, who hail from the United States, but are based in Bogota, but it's not always been like that. They've been based elsewhere. They've been based all over the world, but somehow, somewhere along the, you know, the grand course of life, they've become, well, let's say, residents here in Colombia. So welcome on episode 143 of Colombia Calling.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, how is it, you know, how is it that, let's start with the basics, Nicole, Jeremy. How did you end up in Colombia? Because first, let's start. You started in Medellin, but how did you end up in Colombia?
So basically, we both had very different careers before coming here. Nicole was working in consulting. I was working in public health. We had had very different lives,
yeah.
And then decided that we kind of, you know, we're starting about talking about doing something different. And,
uh-huh.
and you know, at first we started looking to go overseas with our jobs.
Yeah.
And I heard this opportunity to go to Mozambique.
Huh.
And so I thought Mozambique would be great. I'd lived in Africa before. It's, you know, Mozambique's a nice country. And so I kind of came home. And I told Nicole, I said, Nicole, I've got it. We're going to go to Mozambique. And her response was, what the beep am I going to do in Mozambique? And so that kind of spurred this conversation of, well, what would happen if we just left our jobs and did our own thing? Where would we go? What would we do? And so, you know, from that conversation, we just really started talking about, all right, well, let's really make this happen.
Okay.
And that, you know, led to us coming to Colombia.
It's a big jump from Mozambique to Colombia. I mean, it's...
It is.
Give me a little bit of background, though. As you said, you come from very, very varied backgrounds professionally.
Yes.
And now I understand one of you worked in the State Department, another in global health. And now, and I'm going to let on to the listeners, you run food tours here in Colombia.
Yes.
And in Guatemala, because I saw it on your website.
Yes, so there.
Let's say, so from the State Department, Nicole, how do you end up being a foodie?
So I would actually say that is what encouraged my interest in food. I had a lot of opportunities to travel overseas. A lot of my time was spent in Europe, which has a great, very long and rich food history and culture. And I would go to these places traveling alone. I would go to a restaurant, kind of be brave and explore new things, which you can do when you're not paying for the food.
Yes.
So, I would try new things and learn the stories behind where these dishes came from and how they kind of evolved to what we know today.
Okay.
And I always had that interest. And along with that, I always had interest in cooking and kind of discovering new ingredients and things like that. So it's always been a passion of mine, traveling, cooking, food. And I dragged Jeremy along with me.
It doesn't look like he was dragged. He looks pretty comfortable here at the moment.
Yeah.
And but it's a curious one because you guys are living, you know, we watch all of these shows, these TV shows on all these, you know, let's say daytime television about couples moving abroad, you know, the house hunters type thing and so on and forth. But you guys are living this. You really are. You gave up everything to come overseas and follow a passion.
Yeah.
This show goes out to a lot of people thinking or dreaming of doing the thing, but they'll end up, a lot of them will live vicariously through your tales. So think of it like that, because taking the plunge, it's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah.
We probably discussed it for almost a year before we decided to actually make plans and, you know, do it. And our family and friends were probably confused at first, maybe some concerned.
Mm.
You know, you both have great jobs, they pay you a lot of money, you both have graduate degrees. What are you doing?
Yeah. That's right. You know, I mean, and I imagine when you tell a Colombian that as well, you've got graduate degrees and now you're doing this, they must just sort of look at you
yes.
as well, because you're stable. I mean, we were in the States, you were well set up.
And Colombians especially find it fascinating that it's not that we came here because a company brought us here and you know, paid for this. They, when we tell them, we kind of looked at a map of the world and chose Colombia.
They're shocked.
Yes, it's shock. It really is.
Out of all the other countries you could have chosen, but you've lived abroad in many places, so you knew what you were looking for. It's maybe something a bit more Latin, maybe something with so many different opportunities, because Colombia has that. I mean,
and it's growing, and the people are very friendly and welcoming.
Yes, it's true.
And it's close to the U.S., so we wanted something different but familiar.
Yes.
So that's what what we found in Colombia.
Because you have a little Colombian baby.
We do.
Yes. You have a little Colombian baby, and I'm sure that the grandparents miss her terribly.
Yes, they do. Yeah,
so it's a direct flight straight up to wherever. Where is home? Where's New Mexico, I believe, is yours, Jeremy.
I grew up in Mexico, pretty close to the border, but haven't lived there since I was about 21, I suppose. Nicole's from St. Louis.
That's right.
So I was born and raised in St. Louis, left when I was 18, haven't looked back since.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. It's got some nice stuff.
Yeah. Most recently, we were living in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So it was from D.C. to Medellin was the first step.
Wow, it's a big step. It's a big step. But anyway, my hat is off to you, and it's really great to hear this sort of thing. And well, the reason for this move, I mean, you spun the globe, you stopped on Colombia, you ended up in Medellin, but it was for a lifestyle change. I mean, you're looking for something else. I suppose you found it.
We've been very happy here. And so it was definitely a lifestyle decision. We wanted a pleasant place to live, very comfortable, something challenging business-wise, which is mm-hmm. why we started to start our food tour business. But we wanted a family. And so we have our daughter here. We're very happy. We have a great, I know work-life balance is very kind of trendy right now, but that's what we found. So. Yeah.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah. We were living in D.C. We both had good jobs.
We were both traveling.
Yeah,
I was traveling Monday through Thursday domestically. He was traveling internationally for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
So, it's difficult.
Yeah, we were looking at the situation thinking, is this what we want to do for the next 10, 20, 30 years? And if not, when are we going to change?
Yeah.
And if we're going to change, why not now?
But it sounds to me like you were in a relationship, a marriage, where you saw one another at weekends. And that you kind of wanted to cut that a bit. Let's change this lifestyle that we have. And to do so, you needed to move to a different continent. But it sounds a bit like that. But, you know, because I listen to a lot of people, I talk to a lot of people, and I'll make a reference to episode 142, which was the last one with Simon Winograd, who was born in Colombia and adopted to Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I talked about where maybe he'd lived in the United States. And he was adopted at several weeks, mm-hmm. something like that, here in Bogota. And he's lived in 7 to 10 different places because it's that sense of not belonging in various places. And you guys clearly belonged, but you were looking to be together, and you needed to take that step to make that happen, and now you the three of you are here together under one roof and not traveling so much, and it's a success story. I mean, I look at you both here, you certainly look happy.
We're smiling.
You're smiling. You're rested. You're not like me, who's been an hour of Bogota traffic. it's a good thing. And you know, I was talking to my wife about this, about work-life balance, and I've got a very good deal.
Friends in D.C. that had a child and didn't see their partner or the child very much.
Yeah.
So that was not a lifestyle that we wanted to get into.
It's a tough one, isn't it? It's a tough one with all of these things. So anyway, the first place was Medellin. And why did you choose Medellin? Why Medellin principally, let's say, over Bogota, where we are now?
Yeah, our first decision was, okay, let's go to Colombia.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, we had a couple of Colombian friends in D.C. We started talking to people. And really, a lot of the Colombians told us, go to Medellin. Mm-hmm. That, from a lifestyle perspective, if that's what you're looking for, then that, you know, the weather's great. It's a beautiful place. The people are wonderful. There's lots of opportunity. We're looking, you know, to do our food tourism business, and you know, tourism is still very much developing in Medellin at this point. So we thought it was a good opportunity. So we just sort of chose. We thought, like, let's start there and see how it goes.
And another factor was we had each been to Bogota before, so we were familiar with it. So we knew we could go to Medellin. If it didn't work, we'd go to Bogota. Right?
Yeah.
So if we went to Medellin and enjoyed it, we planned on staying.
How long were you in Medellin?
About a year and a half.
Well, a year and a half is a good amount of time. And of course, it treated you well. You had your daughter there. I mean, it is a very comfortable...
Yeah, to get pregnant.
She's a paisa.
Yeah, she's a little paisa.
But no, I mean, that's the deal, isn't it? It's a nice place to live, Medellin. It's very verdant. The weather is good. It's easy to get around. And perhaps despite the small society, there is an international feel, you know, in that kind of, let's say, that a bit of a bubble of Poblado, Laureles and stuff. But I mean, I would say that while there'll be more foreigners in Bogota because of the multinationals, the embassies and everyone, for the people considering moving down for lifestyle purposes would be more in Medellin, I would say. Would you feel the same?
It's an easier transition into living abroad, definitely. Mostly because of how welcoming I think Paisa's people from that region are, which was helpful personally and professionally.
Yes.
People were very, very willing to introduce us to people, make connections, help us out, explain things. So that was very helpful when we were starting our business.
Yes. And how was that, starting a business? I mean, we have to ask that every time for anyone who started a business in Colombia. You know, that let's say the teething problems, the moments of starting up, the bureaucracy. You both worked in big offices. You are familiar with paperwork. But how was it on the Colombian level?
I would say it was not that painful.
Okay, very good.
I think people prepared us for the worst, and we were surprised at how smooth it went.
I'm glad.
Of course, it's headaches no matter where you are, but I was pretty impressed with how easy it was.
Yeah, and for foreigners who are starting a business on our own, you know, not without a Colombian partner, Colombia's pretty open to that.
Yeah.
You know, they're open to the foreign direct investment, they're open to foreigners coming in. They make it...
I would say they encourage it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's not easy because there's paperwork and there's that bureaucratic process and everything. But, you know, you talk to Colombians who are trying to get into the U.S. or other countries and...
It's 10 times harder.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. But there are a lot more Colombians in the U.S. than there are the other way around. I mean, that's what I say to people and say, oh, yeah, but it's true. I mean, I think once you've got the right... people sort of helping you out, it becomes a lot more straightforward here. And of course, you're doing a food tour, you are not preparing the food, so you're not having to go through all the other, you know, those loopholes.
Yes.
Someone else has to go through that. But so, I mean, this is great. And it started out well in Medellin, or was it a slow burn, or did it start quite fast?
I would say it started pretty quickly.
Yeah, we're very surprised. Yeah. Pleasantly surprised. But yeah, we one of the perks of the jobs is that we go around, we try a lot of food. That's what we do.
That's good food and bad food.
That's true.
They both exist.
Yes.
And mediocre food as well. It all exists.
Yeah. So we kind of figured out our tour and then, you know, designed our website, put it up there, and just thought, all right, let's see if people are interested.
Yeah.
And without any sort of aggressive promotion, you just sort of had it up there.
Yeah. Because we really wanted feedback from the market, right? We thought we had a great idea. There was no one doing anything like this in Medellin. We're the only company dedicated to food tourism. And so we thought there was definitely, you know, a need and an interest. We put it out there and someone booked. And then someone else booked. And then we were running a food tourism company.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic. And to see, you know, see these fruits of your labor is just sort of blossoming like that. It's very, very high five. Yeah, that feeling is second to none, really. So now I haven't been to Medellin in a little while. I should go soon. I don't know when I can. Life gets in the way. But I should go. But I can only imagine that the districts of sort of Poblado, Laureles, and others have had a restaurant explosion in recent years. I mean, really, I imagine that the offering has grown immensely. You would say so.
I would say it has grown. It's been a larger international influence, which is what we like to do. So we have an upscale evening tour where we focus on these kind of up-and-coming chefs that are from Colombia, probably left for their training or to work overseas, and they came back to their homeland, and they really wanted to highlight these Colombian ingredients and their experience overseas. So it's a great mix of those two things. And I would say a lot of the new restaurants that are in Medellin are really focusing on that trend.
Yeah, I'd say that's happening quite a bit.
Of course,
in Colombia.
Because there's so many interesting ingredients, for example, the tropical fruits and all the plants and biodiversity here. There are things that chefs can do here that they can't do in other countries.
Sure. Well, that's fantastic. We're going to take a short break, but I'll direct my listeners, the listeners out there, to the website. That's delamesa.com. These are La Mesa food tours with Jeremy and Nicole. You take the food tours yourself here in Bogota at the moment?
So, we started out doing tours ourselves, but now we've hired Colombian guides
who know
their food, know their culture, know their history, know their people, and love talking about Colombians.
Oh, well, that's key, isn't it? So please check out the website, delamesa.com. We'll take a short break and we'll be back talking further about food in Colombia and their food tours. This is episode 143, Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall, and thank you for listening. Don't go away. And we're back, episode 143 with Nicole and Jeremy of La Mesa Food Tours. That's delamesa.com is their website. Check it out. There's all sorts of tours on there. And principally, primarily, I'd like to talk about those. As you started in Medellin, and you've got a, let's say, a variety of tours. Before we move to Bogota, but let's still focus on Medellin. So what do you offer to the traveler coming to Medellin in the way of food tours?
So we have three different tours, and we like to be able to kind of offer different experiences to different visitors coming to Medellin. Mm-hmm. Our most popular one is our Colombian street food tour, which really gives insight into everyday Colombian life, which we feel like a lot of people come here, and they're a little removed from what everyday Colombia is like. Okay. So we go to a traditional neighborhood. It's called Envigado. It's a municipality just south of Medellin. So you get out of El Poblado, the really big tourist area, which is, it's fine for your hotel. But if you really want to see what it's like to live in Colombia, we'd like to go to Envigado. Mm-hmm. It's a very traditional, comfortable, safe neighborhood. A lot of families live there. And so we walk around in the afternoon, about 3 hours. And it's about 7 to 8 different tastings. Mm-hmm. And so you get a variety of foods, from an empanada to the arepa, which, you know, is a divisive thing on its own.
Yeah, you can see my face.
But we found a really good one, and we explain the history and the story behind it and why Colombians are so tied to these foods, right? These are comfort foods that not just Colombians can recognize, but we have visitors from all over the world. When they have an arepa, it reminds them of something from their own culture or from their own home, right? Someone from the U.S. might say, oh, this reminds me of cornbread. Or someone from Mexico might say, oh, this is like a tortilla, right? They use it kind of at every meal. Mm-hmm. And so there's always this connection to this homegrown food and culture that someone can relate to.
Excellent.
And then the other tour we have is...
So we do an upscale restaurant tour where we've actually chosen the top restaurants in Medellin, or what we consider to be the top restaurants in Medellin. And you go around, you get to taste a little bit of something from each restaurant. We pair it with either a cocktail or a glass of wine, and we, you know, you even get to meet some of the chefs, do a little kitchen tour, and it really is just highlighting, you know, we're going to restaurants that are, like we were talking about earlier, that are a lot of times it's Colombian chefs who have been over abroad, they're coming back, and they're, you know, they're really taking Colombian flavors and traditions, and they're giving it a new spin or a new twist from their experience overseas.
Yeah. Like one of our favorite restaurants that we have on that tour, she uses chicharrón, but it's in a salad, right?
Huh.
That's not something that you would ever think or a way to use
like
chicharrón.
Big bacon bits.
Yeah.
Really delicious.
Well, I would like that. I would like chicharrón in a salad. Yeah. It makes it just interesting.
It's a nice balance. Uh-huh. She's really creating this sort of different kind of, you know, it's not the heavy, heavy chicharrón.
So I have to ask, though. So now you know, now that you've opened up to say you know the history of the arepa, what is it? Why is it? Because my immediate knee-jerk reaction is it's a stodgy food to fill you up. The necessity.
That's actually tied to the origins of the arepa.
Okay.
So it actually comes from the indigenous population that was in this region, and the word arepa comes from the indigenous word of that corn cake, and it's spelled with an E originally, arepa.
Arepa.
So the Spanish arrive here, they see the indigenous people eating these nice little corn cakes. The Spanish are like, oh, those look great. They transport easily. They're filling. Mm-hmm. We can take them with us as we travel and kind of conquer Latin America.
All right.
Great snack.
That's an exact quote.
That's an exact quote. Let's take them with us. Yes. What a stroke of luck.
So that's why you find arepas in any department that you go to Colombia, mm-hmm. right? They have their own version of an arepa.
Yeah.
But also you find them in Venezuela, and they do them a different way, right? They cut them open and stuff them.
Yeah.
But you find these similar kind of corn cakes in different parts of Latin America.
Yeah, I mean, the Nicaraguan pupusa
and
other things is very similar. Well, they're tastier. I have to say it's tastier. But anyway, let's not get me into trouble. The arepa is... Well, I do like the stuffed arepa. The rest of them, downtown Bogota, you've been to the arepa cuadrada?
Yes.
That's for me. I mean, she's a baked hippie. Yeah. I don't think after 3 o'clock in the afternoon she knows what's going on, but the best stuffed arepas.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. How many restaurants then does the upmarket restaurant tour take in?
So we do three.
Three.
Because we're going in, we're sitting down, you know, we're having a drink, we're talking about the restaurant, we're talking to the chef, you know, the food comes out. So it's, we're doing about an hour, 45 minutes or an hour at each restaurant.
Wow.
And we're talking about the restaurant, we're talking about the food, but you also get to talk about, you know, Colombian history and culture.
It's still a tour at the same time.
Yeah.
So people have got a chance for, to have around about six cocktails.
We don't usually do six.
Well, if I was there for an hour, you know, if conversation dried up, I'd be waiter.
That's why we're such good conversation.
Okay, very good. I was wondering if you have to shuttle people back, sort of weak at the knees, to their hotel. But of course, I'm sure you make sure that they're in one of those great hotels right there, right on the plaza.
But it's nice because it's a progressive dinner. So how many times can you go to a city and go to the three top restaurants in one night, right? And so we'd like to offer that to our guests, and we let them, you know, see kind of what Medellin has to offer culinary-wise, and also they get a tour and the history and the culture that comes along with it.
I think that's great. Now, I have to ask, because, you know, I work in the tourism industry as well, and we've had some pretty bizarre people stay in the hotel. Maybe having a hotel makes me more exposed to some bizarre people, because there are no secrets. You know exactly what's happened. I think even if I ran a Hilton, I would know what happened in each of the rooms. But as having a place with only 10 rooms, you know, I mean, we've had everything from future daughter-in-laws putting their mother, future mother-in-law to sleep so they can sneak off and go out partying. I've had a hookup in a corridor that I've had to delegate the responsibility to my night guy to go tell them to, you know, get inside a room. You've just about everything. I've sleepwalkers. I mean, you name it. But on a food tour, have you got people who suddenly then say, well, I ate a big lunch? Because I've heard of that happening on a food tour.
So. Most of our guests were very lucky. We get really good people. And, you know, one of the advantages that maybe we have is, you know, we've got people for 3 hours and not overnight.
Yeah.
That does probably make things a little bit easier. But we get all kinds of people with all kinds of information, from Colombian experts to people who had no idea that there was a conflict going on in Colombia for the last 50, 60 years, just blank face, no clue what we're talking about. But, you know, we can work with all kinds of people, and you know, there's something interesting about Colombia for everybody. I mean, one of the biggest characters that we have is not actually one of our guests, but one of the ladies that we work with in Medellin on the street food tour, where we go and have the bandeja paisa, which you know, don't have every single day, but
once a year.
Once a year. If you're in Medellin, you really got to sit down and have a bandeja paisa. But we work with this woman who, you know, has been running this restaurant, very popular restaurant in Envigado, for quite some time.
I think 30 years now.
She's been around for.
She's been making chicharrón for 30 years.
Yeah, but she likes her aguardiente.
Oh, really?
And she likes to share.
Okay, fair enough.
So you bring groups in there, and it depends on the day. Some days she is in the best mood ever. Other days she is just angry at the world, and some days she's just had a little bit too much to even really stand up and walk around. But she always comes with a bottle of aguardiente and a little shot glass, and everyone's got to share the shot glass.
Yeah.
So she fills that thing up, she hands you the shot glass, and there is no discussion or choice. Or no,
we can't refuse.
No, you have that shot, and she's a highlight of the tour.
I can believe it. That's you're getting those types of personalities.
Yeah.
You know, that builds a tour. Yeah. Doesn't it? That really does create the memorable moment.
If she's had quite a few shots, there's a lot of kisses at the end.
Oh, really? Not just to you.
No, everyone.
Everyone's getting kisses.
Yeah.
And tell me, you know, well, I know that most people, and the Colombian diaspora listening to this, and those who've been to Colombia will know what a bandeja paisa is. My description is that it's a Colombian take on the English breakfast. But you've got rice, you've got ground beef, you've got black sausage, morcilla, you've got chorizo on there, you've got chicharrón. There's usually a complimentary sort of just like a one leaf of lettuce to put some green on
the salad.
That's the salad.
Yes.
You get your arepa antioqueña there, which again, I don't know how anyone would eat that after all of this. There are frijoles as well on the plate. Have I missed? And of course the egg on top, the fried egg.
Okay. Often with
a
side of avocado.
Oh, yes, avocado. But that's your health food. But, I mean, it's just... I, for anyone out there listening who's considering a bandeja paisa, my suggestion is to go for the mini bandeja.
Or invite five friends.
Or invite five friends, because... It is. I had a yearning. I had a hankering about 3 months ago. I was like, nothing would fill me up unless it was a bandeja paisa. So I had to find a paisa place here in Bogota. It wasn't hard. But it was great. That's all I wanted. I just need, my poor long-suffering wife had to come and just watch me eat my way through something that thickened my arteries and, you know, put on several pounds and everything. But anyway, I mean, you know, then that's what I kind of want to talk about a little bit, because we talk about Colombian food and we, you know, people know about the ajiaco here in the highlands of Bogota. People know now of the bandeja paisa. If you're up on the Caribbean coast, of course, the arroz con coco and, you know, sort of fried fish and plantains. There's so many different regions in Colombia, and the food does vary, but it's never really been, until recently, this culinary destination. It's never really been, you sort of think of it, well, this is food that's, I would say kind of like a laborer's food, you know, to fill you up, make sure you've got enough in you to keep working through the afternoon. And, you know, every time, and that's why I think of the arepa like it being. My father-in-law, who's from the coast, is not happy unless he has potatoes, rice, and plantain on his plate.
Three starches,
you know,
for sure.
And if you get pasta on there as well, I mean, you know, he's over the moon, but he's not happy. And I think that's changing, though. But that's such a different generation. But I mean, you know, the fact that we've now got food tours, like yourselves and so on, and you've expanded to Bogota, is that there has been a culinary revolution. They're not changing the diets, just changing a bit the way things are done, I think. I don't know, I'd like to hear your opinions a bit about this.
No, I agree. I think the perspective of what food is in Colombia is changing. Like you said before, it was very kind of get your belly full, kind of necessity food.
Yeah.
And now I think a lot of Colombian chefs and younger Colombians are understanding that they have this huge variety of ingredients and they can do so much with them, right? Mm. Chicharrón doesn't have to be fried and served on a bandeja paisa.
No, it
doesn't. It can be mixed with a lovely salad that comes from fresh herbs and greens and grapefruit and oranges. And you're taking advantage of all these fresh and natural ingredients here, but mixing it with some of the comfort foods that people are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where the Colombian culinary trends are going now. And we see a lot of young chefs that are really focusing on bringing that kind of experience to Colombian diners, especially in Bogota, where there's this new kind of boom in restaurants and things like that.
I have to say, in the last 3 to 4 years, Bogota has really, I mean, previously it was, yeah, I would go for Corrientazos for lack of something else to eat. And now I'm just spoiled for choice. And I feel that I've been left, sort of outside of the foodie circle for about a year and a half since Alba got pregnant and had a baby. You know, and now he's 14 months old. And, well, essentially don't have a social life. So I've not been able to go to restaurants. And we're just starting now. You're like, So many options opened up now.
Well, and that's one reason we're very excited to come from to move from Medellin to Bogota. Medellin, it's good. It's growing.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically one neighborhood in Bogota has about as many restaurants as Medellin. I mean, that's a bit of a generalization, but there's so many neighborhoods in Bogota to discover and so much going on. It's at a different level still than Medellin. Although my paisa friends are going to be mad.
Oh, they will. And I'm going to put a disclaimer on this that I didn't say this. The paisa friends will get mad. No, Medellin is doing, and I don't want to sound patronizing, it's the second city, you know, in this respect. The capital city will always lead in that respect because of the, let's say, just in the nature of a capital city. But it is, I'm sure you've been to Salvo Patria, you've been to Donostia, I guess, as well, which I just love that place. And that's, again, the chef's name's Thomas, right, in Donostia.
Okay.
And he's one of those who's come back look for these recipes and to apply Colombian elements, but sort of respectfully and not doing it over the top. Mm-hmm. And that's just...
Not frying everything.
Good God.
Yeah. We had dinner at Salvo Patria and they served a fresh fish, right?
Yeah.
Like a crudo.
Yeah.
Which is unheard of in a Colombian restaurant. Because normally when you get a fish, it's fried, battered and fried. And it's the Caribbean style, but they have two coasts here, right?
Yeah.
With this huge abundance of fish. And so now that's what you're getting, this kind of fresher, lighter, using the ingredients in a different way, which is what we like to explore.
It's about enjoying the food, right?
Yes,
it's about enjoying the food. So you're setting up, I imagine, at the top end restaurant tour here. Yes. It's in the process. Mm-hmm. It's in the
process.
We're
eating our way through all the restaurants. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, there's going to be no better reference than you guys. You both are remarkably trim. I would be three times my weight, I think, if I had to go out and try all these things. But then that brings me to my experiences with this food critic, A.A. Gill, when he came to Bogota. He just said he never finished a plate ever. He just always three bites or something like that, and it was a taste, and then move on to the next thing.
Well, Jeremy hates that because we go to a restaurant and I order 10 things because I just want to taste, and he has to finish them.
Yeah. So. I don't have to, but I do.
But I understand that as well. First of all, I hate sharing food. I have a real problem with that. And it's not so much of a main course, it's dessert. I can't stand sharing my dessert.
The last time I didn't get to share food was 2014, I think.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. So you're a seasoned professional on this now. So let's talk about the street food here in Bogota, because it's one of those things as well. I keep thinking back to daytime TV. Not like I'm some kind of junkie for it, but there's all these travel shows, and there's all these food shows, and there's all these housing shows, and the travel shows, or you know, there's always those sort of foreigners who get in trouble overseas, not the ones, you know, who get locked up in jail for nefarious things, but who eating the wrong food and then being hospitalized for 6 weeks or whatever, losing a limb or something. But I mean, that sort of fear becomes engendered by this fear of the street food. And so you guys have had to go out there to some pretty interesting places and try the street food to ensure that it's of a quality that you're not going to get sued. I think I just say it like that. Yeah. You haven't been sued yet. Let's clarify. You've had no issues because you have checked out the food.
Yes, we eat everything that's on the tour, and of course things that aren't on the tour that we've eaten and are not quite up to the standards that we like. Mm. But I have to say, in general, I think Colombian sanitation, health, the vendors are all very top-notch, right?
But Colombians are incredible. I mean, you know, cleanliness, your appearance is everything.
Yes.
So you could be with, you know, a guy who lives in a dirt floor place, but he sells something, but he will be presented.
Yes, very true.
So what are the weird, I mean, do you take people to taste the weird, wonderful stuff, or is it sort of, let's say, like Chinese food for foreigners rather than Chinese food for Chinese people?
We're doing, I mean, legitimate, authentic Colombian food.
Good.
But I don't think we're, you know, I think most of our travelers just really want to get to know, you know, okay, what's the tip of what are Colombians eating? Mm-hmm. Right? And Colombians aren't always going out and eating even mondongo or something like this, which isn't really all that exotic, but, you know, but that's something special. But are they having an arepa every day? Yes. Are they having bananas? Are they
chocolate?
Chocolate.
With cheese in it.
Yeah.
With cheese in it.
So that's what we're really trying to show. So we're not really trying to be so crazy exotic like that. We're really,
it's not shock value. Yeah. We really want people to eat and taste and enjoy and understand the significance of the food and the history and the stories behind it.
Excellent. And that sounds to me as being the most sort of ideal route, rather than sort of like, oh, try this, you know. And I'll say this, you know, for those of you under 18, close your ears here. It's like when people say to you, oh, try this, it tastes like shit. It's like, well, I don't want to. I don't want to. And I think that whole shock value, it's very short-lived, isn't it? It's great for an Instagram photo or whatever it is, and then post it on Facebook so your parents can be scandalized.
Yeah.
Look at you, the natural Viagra of the live crowd and juice and stuff. But I think you would get more out of it just actually trying the regular everyday street food. Yeah. I think you would. I think that's, so you try the buñuelos and stuff like that. Exactly. And these are fun, you know, because people just don't see them elsewhere.
Yes. So. And they see them, you know, especially people who've been in Colombia for a few days, like, oh, I've seen this. You know,
what is that? What's inside?
That's
what
an oblea. Like? It's got arequipe inside of it. Oh, I want to try one. All right.
That's really good. I mean, arequipe is caramel, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's, you know, people look at it like, well. I do have an issue, though, sometimes when they grate cheese on top
There's a lot of cheese in the dessert.
Yeah, you know, it's like, that looks like such a good fruit salad. And then, oh yeah, cheese, it's grated on top of it. I'm not sure I wanted mozzarella on top of my fruit salad. But then that, I don't know, I think that's another thing of filling you up. I think it's one of those things that is still there. I think there's all sorts of things on offer around Colombia. In Mompós, we have fruit wines made by a local guy. If you're diabetic, it'll kill you. I mean, it's as simple as that. And we, fortunately, I know that he won't be listening to this show. and he makes it with the corozo fruit, which is the palm fruit, and other stuff, the guayaba agria, and bitter oranges, and other things. Star fruit, too. We use it to cook with. It's actually better that way around. And you know, it's interesting using that. I don't think we've ever told him we use it to cook with. I think he just thinks we drink it and it's nice. I can't recommend it. And there's one of them, and I never remember which one it is, because I always take people through, if I'm ever doing any sort of guiding there, I talk people, it's the aftertaste. You taste it, it enters your mouth and you know it's fruit, but then the aftertaste is a bit like sausage. So you're like, have you ever had sausage juice? Before. and I do take people through just for that shock element. But then I get a bit bored doing these tours. Yeah. Okay, so now we've got these tours, and you're with people for, like, say, around roughly 3 hours.
Right. Yeah.
You get to know them relatively well.
Yeah, we
okay.
do. And we really like our tours to be interactive, so we encourage questions and discussion and things like that, because as a visitor, you might see something or hear something or observe something and not really understand what's going on. And so we really encourage people to say, hey, you know, I was in, I don't know, Plaza Bolivar, and I saw this. What does that mean? Or what is this building? Or this person said this or something like that.
Which is also why we keep them small.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we do a maximum of 8 people.
8's very good.
Yeah.
It's
so
very good.
Most of them probably average, you know, 4, 5, 6 people kind of thing. So that we can, it's a conversation. It's a 3-hour conversation.
Uh-huh.
In the beginning, you know, maybe we're talking a little bit more, but as people open up, you know, it really just becomes this sort of conversation among friends.
Yeah. Because the groups are so small, we can kind of semi-personalize what the topics are, right? So some people are really history buffs. We can focus on that. Some people really want to learn about the food and, like, how do you make this and what are the ingredients?
Mm-hmm.
Other people want to know about everyday life. You know, what is it like living in Colombia?
Yeah. How much does rent cost?
Yeah.
I know people, it's interesting, but it's, these things, you don't think about it until you then get asked that question, and then you realize people are asking it more often. And it's very interesting. So, let's give you the big plug then. So delamesa.com is your website. These are La Mesa food tours in Bogota and Medellin, and indeed in Guatemala, Antigua Guatemala.
Yes.
I lived for a year, so I was very happy to see it on there.
It's a lovely place.
1996. God, I don't even remember. It was so long ago now. It was my first foray into Latin America, living abroad. Anyway, so... you've got various tours on the website. The website's very easy to find. People contact you directly through that.
Mm-hmm.
8 people per tour. And you go most Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Yes, in Bogota, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
And it's 3 hours, and you pick people up from their hotels, or they have to find
they
you?
They meet us at Parque de los Periodistas.
Okay.
It's very easy to find.
Very, very easy.
Yeah.
Okay, so part of downtown in the Candelaria, Parque de los Periodistas, near the Real Academia Española, and all the universities, and
that's
the graffiti and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's all based downtown in Candelaria.
Yeah.
Very nice. I think it's a very good thing too. And anything else? Let's say, you can see on the website.
You
can pay online.
We didn't even get into, we have a wonderful Colombian coffee tour as well.
Oh, would you please?
Medellin,
we've got minutes.
Where we go visit a Colombian finca, coffee finca, and a roaster as well, which is, I think, what makes our tour very interesting. You know, there are a lot of coffee tours. You go see the finca, you get to see the coffee trees and you know, get to see the fruit, but you know, the second part of that, the roasting is just as important as the growing process. And we do a whole memory sensory tasting at the roaster, where we got all kinds of fruits and spices, and you know, you smell those and you smell the coffee, and it's really a cool experience. You learn,
and I think that's where we learned the most in our time here.
Mm-hmm.
We were both coffee drinkers, and you think you know what coffee is, but you don't understand the process and the time and the people involved in getting you a good cup of coffee.
It is as complicated as wine, at least.
Are you coffee snobs?
Now I am, unfortunately. I'm not ashamed to say.
I'm a dreadful coffee snob.
Because once you know what bad coffee is, you don't want to go back.
You know, if someone's burnt it with boiled water or something, I'm liable to send it back. You know, it's like I'm sorry.
Because you want good.
I want good coffee. I come from the land of coffee now, you know. It's like, oh, that's fantastic. So this is a tour very close to Medellin.
Yeah.
How far outside of the city?
We were lucky enough to find a beautiful finca about 30 minutes outside of the city.
So really, just there indeed.
It's a day trip, 8 hours. You go to the finca and the roastery and drink lots of good coffee and
a nice lunch. Yeah.
And a nice lunch out there in the beautiful countryside outside of Medellin. Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. You guys are, you know, I like it when I get people on here who are doing things, following a dream, and it's successful, of course. And that's really, you know, positive. It's really heartwarming. And for people out there listening, it is too. That people, you know, do and can change a lifestyle for as we say, like work-life balance and all of these things. And you guys are clearly benefiting from it. You're enjoying yourself. So I'd like to take this moment and say, you know, Nicole, Jeremy, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Everyone go out and quit your job.
Everyone go out and quit your job and come to Colombia. We'll see how that works. Anyway, so this has been episode 143. Please check out their website. It's La Mesa Food Tours. That's delamesa.com. I'm sure you'll find something there that's to your liking. I've been Richard McCall talking to Nicole and Jeremy. This has been episode 143 of Colombia Calling. Thank you for listening.